Hello, everyone. Welcome to another edition of Meet the Candidates. I'm your host, Jonathan Grabowski. We are in general election season, and joining me is a returning person to the show, and that is State Senator Pat O'Connor. Pat, how are you?
Jonathan, good to see you.
This is your fifth time on the show.
Fifth time.
For a while there, 2 years ago, it felt like you were on every other week, and we'll get into that maybe in a little bit. But for those that don't know you, who is Pat O'Connor?
Sure. Well, it's a pleasure to be back on the show. Mm-hmm. And I've been the state senator for the Plymouth and Norfolk District for the past 2.5 years. Prior to that, I was a counselor in Weymouth for 12 years, including the council president, up until when I became the state senator. And also for 1 year, I kind of did both, mm-hmm. Up until my term expired, because I made that promise to the voters of Weymouth to fulfill that obligation. I born and raised in Weymouth, went to Weymouth High School. After that, I had the opportunity to go over to school in London, England. And when I was 21 years old, ran for the council in Weymouth and was able to get elected. So I've been in government for a long period of my life here, and also worked for 8 years up on Beacon Hill for State Senator Headland, now Mayor Headland, sort of representing the district's needs. So I've had the honor and privilege of representing this district for the past 2.5 years.
So take us through the past 2.5 years. What have been some of the highlights and accomplishments?
Well, I think that it needs to be separated in sort of three different brackets. The state accomplishments, I think, have been really incredible. Working with Governor Baker and his team and being able to create 180,000 jobs, being able to vote on 3 budgets, which turned an $800 million deficit into an over $1 billion surplus, which we've actually cashed about 50% of that away into the Rainy Day Fund, as well as deal with some of the most challenging and pressing issues in the Commonwealth, whether it be transportation or healthcare, the opioid crisis. Mm-hmm. Then I think the second pronged approach is what's happening right here in the South Shore. And I think what's happening here in the South Shore is awesome. We have been able to do so much and make so many targeted investments over the past 2.5 years. And you see it, whether it be driving down Route 3 and seeing the new bridge work that's being done, the Four River Bridge opening, a $244 million project, Route 18 being widened, and then some of the local earmarks that we're really proud to have gotten, whether it's creating adult disabled housing in Cohasset, where we secured $180,000 for that, or continuing to open up some of the homes for our veterans, which we have one opened up in Weymouth, and I was able to secure $100,000 for the one that's soon to be opening up in Marshfield. So there's a lot of good stuff going on. You see it all over the South Shore, and we just want to keep that momentum going.
So you worked for Bob Headland previously. So what was it like going from being Bob's right-hand guy to being the guy, and what's some things you've learned in that 2.5 years?
I've learned a lot. You know, it's definitely a transition from when you become a staffer to sort of the person that runs the staff and the person that's the one taking the votes. Mm-hmm. It's a large responsibility and obligation that I don't take for granted at all. And it's one of those things that working for Bob gave me the opportunity to kind of go in head first. And in the first 24 hours in office, we've filed 47 budget amendments and secured over $500,000, because when we got sworn in, it was actually budget week.
Yeah.
And the amendment deadline was that day. So it's just been able to really become accustomed to the job, and I feel like we have a lot of good momentum. I have an unbelievable staff that I work with each and every single day that do a lot for the people here on the South Shore, and you know, just want to keep on doing that work.
So why seek re-election?
Well, I love the job. I love the people of this district. I love the momentum that we have and all the things that we've been able to accomplish, but to be perfectly honest with you, I want to get back to work. I love being able to work on behalf of the people of this district, go up there and cast votes, mm-hmm. on some of the most crucial issues that are facing the Commonwealth in this region. And there's a lot of really important stuff that's coming up and really important stuff that we've been able to accomplish. In coastal infrastructure, we had the environmental bond bill that recently got passed. We were able to secure $12 million for the district for seawalls. You see seawall repair going up right now. You see beach nourishment going on, mm-hmm. The transportation improvements. So I just want to keep this going and continue to deliver for the South Shore.
I want to do a little civics 101 here. What's the role of the state senator?
So the best way that I've been able to explain this is that a town is run by a board of selectmen, the federal government's run by U.S. Congress, and the state is run by state senators and state representatives. So if you narrow it down to that sort of focus, every issue that comes up in the state that's not federally regulated, so something that the state wants to do, whether it be hands-free driving or making sure that, mm-hmm. there's no distracted driving, the state can put in a law and the state legislature, state senators, vote on those issues. And I've always taken it that my opinion of this job is to go up there and not necessarily do what I want to do, but do what the people of the district want me to do. So I take in all of that, every person I've met along this journey, into consideration when we cast a vote to make sure that we're providing the South Shore with the representation they deserve on Beacon Hill when I go up there and cast a vote. And then down here, it's about helping people. It's about making sure that if it's an issue as small as navigating the new Real ID system to as large as helping someone's family member get assistance for addiction, we're there at the other end of the line, listening to people's concerns day in and day out and providing them with solutions to their problems.
What committees do you sit on?
I serve on quite a few. I serve on housing, which has been great. We were able to pass a big housing bond bill. I serve on economic development, emerging technology, which was also good because we passed a big life sciences bill this year. I serve on the education committee, and I serve on the global warming and climate change committee, state personnel administration, as well as some special committees, one on addiction, one on net neutrality, and the other one on healthcare cost containment.
There's a big thing now where people sit on the political spectrum. Some, you know, there's labels of far right, far left, you know how it works. Where do you sit on the political spectrum?
I'd say in the center. I'm a moderate Republican. I believe that that's the best approach to take, especially in this kind of crazy political environment that we have, is that you need to have an open mind, and we can't continue to sort of label people by the letter after their name. We need to look at the name of the person themselves, who they are, what their background is, and not necessarily judge people for what their political ideology is, but you know, at the table when they're presenting an idea, take it for all it's worth.
I have a feeling I know the answer to this question, but I'm gonna see, fill in the blank with a current political figure or a recent political figure. If you like blank, you'll like Patrick O'Connor.
I'd say Governor Charlie Baker. I'm guessing that was
what I was going to say.
No, Governor Baker has been we've been allies for even before I got into the state Senate. He came down and helped my campaigns when I was running for councilor in Weymouth. And he's just been a fantastic governor, in my opinion. All of the things that he is doing is spot on. And some of the investments that we've made in transportation, especially with some of the new train stations that are coming, new parking garages, new transit-oriented developments that are coming, as well as new cars for some of our lines, you're going to see a dramatic improvement in transportation. But one of the biggest things that, and to take away from this, is the opioid epidemic. Right. The way that the governor has handled this by creating 1,100 new beds, by having the STEP Act and having the CARE Act both get in place, and now those are national models that recently the National Governors Association, the nonpartisan group of all 50 governors, had put him in charge of the Health and Human Services Subcommittee, and 45 states are going to adopt the exact STEP Act or a variation of that. So he's been a leader in one of the biggest public health crises that we've seen, if not we've ever seen, in this country. So that's to go to show that he really has the respect of Democrats and Republicans on a national level, and the way that he manages in a bipartisan fashion is exactly the way that I want to continue to move Massachusetts forward.
I'm going to jump around actually a little bit because you mentioned the opioid epidemic. What are some measures that need to be taken to combat this? And do you think we also need to start at the youth level of, you know, educating children?
Oh, we definitely have to start at the youth level. That is the paramount thing. Every person I've talked to on this says that you're not going to arrest your way out of the situation. This is something that has to be ingrained into young kids, that this needs to end at some next step of this generation. We had some encouraging numbers out of Weymouth recently that year to date from September 1, 2018 and September 1, 2017, that opiate deaths had dropped 90% in the town of Weymouth. Okay. And we had a 42% decrease in the amount of overdoses. This has been a very aggressive and compassionate approach that the community of Weymouth has taken, and honestly, really the whole South Shore has taken, to address this epidemic. And I believe that we need to take all best practices that these communities that are seeing some of these drops and spread them across the Commonwealth. And I think that one of the other things that needs to be done is one of the provisions that wasn't included in the CARE Act, and that's making sure that medical professionals are allowed to section individuals who aren't taking care of themselves and that may not have the family or friend background of individuals, that support system in place to get them the help that they need. And these medical professionals who are seeing them two or three times a month overdosing on drugs, I think that they can tell them what's best for them. So I think that there are some things that we definitely need to continue to do. Those numbers are encouraging, but the work continues on this epidemic.
Is it the biggest issue facing the district?
I think that it's definitely one of the biggest issues facing the district. When you look at just the human component of this, this is the biggest public health crisis in probably the history of this country. And we need to do everything we possibly can because it's a three-pronged approach. It's making sure we assist those who are still fighting this addiction. It's making sure we have the best support services in place for those in recovery. And it's also making sure that we arrest and prosecute those people who are peddling this poison on our streets. And as long as we continue to do that and continue to move proactively, I think that we'll continue to see decreases in the amount of fatalities that are being caused by this horrible epidemic.
Question one, I know you come from a family that has a nurse in it. What's your thoughts on it?
I'm in favor of question one. It's one of those situations that we need to make sure that both sides are putting out some very interesting statistics, and the Health Policy Commission is going to come out with some reviews of exactly what will happen should this question pass. And we want to make sure that as we go through, and if this question does pass, that when we implement it, that we will make sure that some of these things potential resources being shut off to people, potential closures of different units, that we're gonna make sure that as we go through with this process, that we do it as smoothly as possible. But my mother, she has approximately 4 years ago, she is a NICU nurse, so she has the ratios set in place for her right now, and she says that they're working. She believes that some of the nurses are overstaffed at St. Elizabeth's Hospital in Brighton, and I hear it all the time from nurses that they believe that there needs to be ratios in place, and especially now with such a emphasis on people going to the ER and so many different things that they're dealing with, whether it be the opioid crisis or whether it be the failing healthcare system that's going on, that we need to make sure that we continue to address this issue, and that's why I'm in favor of ratios.
As someone that's had to kind of deal with ballot questions at the State House, do you think ballot questions are a good way of making or changing laws?
I don't think that they're a good way of making or changing laws, but I do also believe the legislature has to be quicker in making decisions. The nurses have been trying to get this something done for, probably two decades on patient ratios. And now you've seen a tremendous amount of money being drawn into the healthcare field and still nothing being changed on that. But one of the worst things that we did as far as a ballot question is in 2002, we passed a ballot question to teach all of our English learners in one form of education, that's sheltered English immersion. And since that period of time, 15 years later, we found out that about one in every two kids were falling through the cracks and not actually learning our language or being able to learn other subjects in their native language because of something that we sent to the voters. In my opinion, we should have had experts at a table that know immigration policy, that know education, that know ESL, that know how to continue to have these kids be educated. Instead, we gave it to the voters. And last year, I served on a conference committee where we actually changed that and allowed more flexibility to each school district and each teacher. Rather than have a blanket approach to the entire Commonwealth, we basically brought this back down to the local level and said, let us give you the resources at the local level to educate your kids the best way you can.
You mentioned healthcare. How are you going to work to make sure residents have affordable and quality healthcare?
I think that the quality component's there. I think that quality, accessibility, and affordability were the three kind of major prongs of healthcare. And I think accessibility and quality are there. The affordability component is not. And what we need to do, and one of the things that I was charged with as state senator for this region, was to go to a couple other states and listen to some of the work that those states have been doing to cut the costs of healthcare while still maintaining the level of quality and a level of access. And one, for instance, in Minnesota was hearing about a fire-based EMS program that they have out there that essentially you call 911 and the fire-based EMS will show up and triage the situation right there at a person's house. So if they have a sprained ankle, they can say, put some ice on this, it looks like it's just a sprain, and we'll send a caseworker back in a day or give you a phone call and see how you're doing. The second is, somebody has a more significant strain and they probably think that there could be a tear, so then they triage that person and send them to urgent care, and that person in urgent care can then get the needs that they desire. And then the third is obviously if it's an emergency, they go to the ER. But just separating this and triaging it at the location through the fire department, that provides more funds to the municipality, has really saved quite a bit of money, and I think that that's something that we should look at here in Massachusetts. Other areas are telemedicine, which has been huge in rural areas in America, and what we need to do is we just need to continue to adapt and get quicker at doing that because costs are out of control, and I think that people see it when everybody's budget, whether you're an individual person, whether you're a family, a small business, a municipality, or the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, all of our budget busters are healthcare, and that needs to change.
Something that's been brought up in regards to healthcare, and I know we could probably spend a half hour on this one topic, is single payer. What are your thoughts in a somewhat brief, you know?
Sure. I mean, I think that given the structure and how much of a mess it is right now for affordability of healthcare, I think that everything should be on the table. But I went up to Vermont and talked with the state senator up there, who was actually a huge advocate when Vermont tried to do this 4 years ago. And at the end of the day, Governor Shumlin said it was going to be about a 9.5% income tax increase and an 11.5% payroll tax increase. And he, who was then at that point in time the champion of single payer, mm-hmm. said that this is just too much of a burden on our economy. And, you know, this could potentially impact small businesses and impact the middle class. And it was something that they decided not to do. So I would say that everything's on the table, but if it's an 11.5% increase on payroll and 9.5% increase on income, I think there are better ways to do it.
Talk to me about some of the work you've done to support adult day health services and Alzheimer's.
Yeah, well, Massachusetts recently just passed a very comprehensive Alzheimer's bill, and this basically mandates that doctors and nurses and mental health professionals all have to be trained in the diagnosis and care of individuals with Alzheimer's. And this stems from a lot of people going to the hospital and physicians and other folks in the hospital setting not necessarily knowing how to handle individuals who had Alzheimer's. And also, after an Alzheimer's diagnosis in Massachusetts now, you'll have to notify a guardian, mm-hmm. a child of that individual or their spouse that they have Alzheimer's. Before then, you didn't have to do that. So that was some common sense things that I think that we focused in on Alzheimer's. And as far as adult day health, we were able to increase that line item by $4 million this past year. I advocated for an $8 million increase in this line item. It's the highest it's ever been funded. And what we need to do is continue to drive those services, because 50% of the individuals who are in that programming have intellectual developmental disabilities mm-hmm. or Alzheimer's, and these are the most vulnerable adult aging populations that we have here in the Commonwealth, and it's our responsibility to take care of them.
One of the district has a lot of coastline, and so therefore coastline infrastructure. How do we work to preserve coastline infrastructure?
Well, that's a great question. It really is, and I think that it comes from a multi-pronged approach as well, which is protecting the infrastructure that we have through the seawall and dam and seawall repair fund that we've been so successful at since its inception. We've secured over $23 million. Shout out to Representative Cantwell, who is one of the mm-hmm. people who created the program. But what we need to do is we need to continue to make those investments. I mentioned the environmental bond bill. We were able to secure $12 million in that environmental bond bill $6 million in that environmental bond bill for coastal infrastructure improvements. There needs to be more resiliency efforts. A lot of the money inside of the environmental bond bill is going to go back to this district, and that's one way to do it. Beach nourishment, and also a commission that we were able to establish inside the environmental bond bill to look at how flood insurance is going to work as we move forward, and how the state can play a hand in flood insurance in and of itself to make sure that people's houses that need to get raised are getting raised, and that people's houses that they may not be able to afford flood insurance for and are in areas that, you know, you look at and say, how much longer does this area actually have left before Mother Nature takes its course, that the state has some sort of program to assist those individuals in purchasing or getting out of their house and making that preserved open space.
You're on the education committee. Do we need education reform in Massachusetts?
We do. We need it in three areas, and that's in special education costs have risen since the education reform in 1993. The costs for health insurance have increased, and the amount of funding for those who are the most economically disadvantaged in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts has not been changed adequately enough in that period of time. The Massachusetts State Senate passed a bill that basically said, let's give every economically disadvantaged child in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts twice the amount of local aid that they're receiving right now, so basically 100% increase. The House passed a bill that basically said, let's have the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education set that number. And that was the conference committee that was on at the end of session, where we weren't able to get a bill done because both sides were just off as far as what they wanted to set as the minimum threshold. But I'm proud to stand with my Senate colleagues in saying that we should do everything we possibly can to account for healthcare costs, everything we possibly can to fund special education, and everything we possibly can for those kids who are economically disadvantaged, and education is their way out.
What about higher education? How do we ensure that higher education is affordable in the state?
I think that higher education is, as far as the state public universities mm-hmm. and colleges, is reasonably priced when it comes to the overall chaos that's going on in higher education funding in the United States of America. but we need to do everything we possibly can. We really need to put pressure on the federal government to finally, once and for all, figure out a comprehensive system to rein in the amount of money that children are coming out of college with. Because when you're talking about a potential house worth of debt that some of these young adults are taking on, it's just absolutely too much money. And we recently passed a bill to put an ombudsman in place to make sure that no person in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is being ripped off by lenders for colleges and universities, including the federal government.
Do we need to push the trade route more in education?
Yeah, the governor has a workforce skills career program that I was proud to support. I think we've put over $30 million into that since its inception in 2015, and it's a great program. It's assisting for that in the STEM field, manufacturing and trades, and it goes directly to the source, and the commission that he established to sort of determine where the need is for this, the best need, is comprised of those who are the employers who are struggling to find employees to fit certain areas of that of need in the Commonwealth for employment. And I think the trades is an awesome route to go. I'm the son of a nurse and a son of a plumber. So a lot of what trades is about is ingrained in me. And a lot of what's been afforded to me in life is because of two individuals, my parents, that worked in trades.
You've been involved in economic development on states, on the state side, on the town side. How would your reelection help small business or the small business climate in the district?
Well, I think the small business climate in the district is strong. There are definitely pockets of it that need some improvement. I was able to secure $25,000 for small business improvements in Hull, in downtown Hull, because Hull is such a seasonally based business district. And so hopefully that money will go in there. We put a trolley system in place in Hull, which brought people from Pemberton Point all the way to the beach and vice versa. That increased business development. And it's just going to be continued to make sure that we do as much as we can. I have a small business tour where I go around to small businesses all across the district, and then we put them on our social media to promote them, to hopefully get some folks to check them out. And I think that that's really what it's about. And at the end of the day, doing the work and making sure that we continue to keep our economy strong, especially our local economy, is going to be one of the main drivers of economic success and small business success throughout the South Shore.
If reelected, what are some of the priorities?
Well, we have a lot of bills that that we filed this year that we worked on that we got really far. Two in particular was, and they're both very important to me. One is the Baby Box program, which provides a safe sleeping environment to every child born in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This came to me from my mother, again, a NICU nurse, who through the marvels of modern medicine was able to bring a child who was born premature back to life and release them to a caring and loving family. And unfortunately, they didn't have a safe sleep environment for that child, and that child tragically died, suffocating. And that shouldn't have to happen, and that shouldn't happen here in Massachusetts. And there's a company, it's ran by a social entrepreneur out of California, Jennifer Cleary, who runs Baby Box. They're willing to give these boxes to us for free, and it's basically a 2.5 by 1.5 foot cardboard box, no cover, with a breathable mattress. It's filled with supplies, whether those supplies be soap and shampoo and different pamphlets on services. And that's something I really want to get past, because not only does it provide a safe sleep environment, it connects an individual who may need the help of the healthcare professionals and healthcare industry that we have in Massachusetts, and it connects them to hopefully give that child the best shot it possibly can. And the second one is Dana's Law, which it creates a registry of those who abuse senior citizens and those with intellectual and developmental disabilities in Massachusetts. Ann Joyce, the mother of Dana, came to me very early on in my term and told me about the abuse that her son had experienced in a group home and said that this shouldn't happen, and I agree with her 100%. And sometimes these individuals fall through the cracks of the Corey system, and actually one of the people who abused her child later applied for a job with her company. And had it not been for them knowing the situation with Ann, dedicating her life after having Dana to being a nurse in this field, that they would have hired him. And that's something that can't happen. We need to put every precaution in place for those who are most vulnerable in society, that we have to make sure that we care for them the best we possibly can.
Wrapping up, so we have a few more questions. But
sure.
You got involved in local issues at a young age. Why should more young people get involved in the issues that affect their community?
You know, I've seen so many remarkable people on this journey, that whether they're getting an Eagle Scout or a Girl Scout award, or they're doing something amazing for the community, giving back. And it's one of those things that a lot of it's centralized at such a young age. And government and politics definitely is loud right now, and it's getting an interesting reputation. Mm-hmm. But it's still the best way to possibly help people and what we're able to do on a day-to-day basis, and whether it be pushing state policy or bringing money back to the district or just helping somebody with a constituent case. Those are the things that I really like and try to influence that on the younger people in the district, is that this is a great avenue to help folks and get a lot of stuff done.
If someone wants to find out more about you, where can they go?
They can go to O'ConnorForSenate.com is our website. We have a Facebook page, which is Senator O'Connor. Our Twitter handle is at Patrick M. O'Connor, and we're all over social media and do that. We try and keep people updated with almost a constant day-to-day of our activities.
We always try to end the show with some fun stuff because we talk about a lot of heavy issues throughout the show. So first one is, what's something about you that people may find interesting?
Well, when I was 13 years old, I founded a internet company with another person, and we were able to basically be a sort of a middleman between websites and advertisers, providing advertising stock to individuals who needed ads, and then also providing content for folks who wanted to display ads. So that afforded me the opportunity to go over to school in London, and it's been a great experience.
If we were to steal your iPod or iPhone, what music would we find on it?
I've been loving Imagine Dragons lately. Okay. I think that they're a really good band with a pretty cool backstory, and the only time that I'm kind of going to get away is I'm going to see Jackson Browne. So sort of bring it back old school. I love Jackson Browne.
Right. And finally, why are you the best candidate for this position?
You know, for the past 2.5 years, I've been doing this, been dedicating my life, and it's an honor and privilege to be able to go out there day in and day out and have this responsibility. I believe that what we've been doing over the past 2.5 years speaks for itself. Mm-hmm. I think you can see the momentum going on the South Shore. We have two new libraries coming, we have a new school coming, we have all this infrastructure work being done, mm-hmm. we have seawalls being built, we have beaches being renourished, we have local economies that are strong. I just want to continue to get back to work on behalf of the people of this district and provide them with the representation they deserve, because I have a great team behind me that works day in and day out to make sure that we do just that.
Well, Senator, we want to thank you for joining us today on the show.
My pleasure.
Wish you the best of luck during this election season.
Great. Thanks, Jonathan.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
And that's all the time we have for Meet the Candidates. And until next time, make it a great day.